Welcome into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. It is our first show of the off season, which is so sad. No more games to be talking about, but we have a lot of topics still this week, not only recapping the game, but Hall of Fame news, some other things going on around here. We know you probably have tons of questions as the team has wrapped up the 2017 season, so send all of those our way. Use that hashtag BucksLive on Twitter. That's how I'll be able to find those. We'll get to those in the final segment. For now, figured we'd go ahead and start off recapping the Saints game a little bit and just end of season, how we felt like things wrapped up and how much that win changed how we felt right. About how things wrapped up. So overall, what do you think that win, and not only just that it was a win, but the way it happened, what did that do for the team?
I've been discussing this a lot with people since that game, and the question of how much impact does the win have compared if the Bucs had lost.
Right.
And to borrow a line, and I said this to somebody else, but to borrow a line from Dirk Cutter that he uses a lot, it makes sense, but it's really not quantifiable. You just don't know how much is going to matter. And it's easy to argue that a win at the end of the season, while it feels really good in terms of momentum, I don't know how long that really lasts, because the Buccaneers won their last game last year to go 9-7, and there was no real momentum into the next season. But that being said, I think you could back me up on this. There was a pretty good mood around here despite the 5-11 finish, and a lot of guys talking really optimistically about what they thought could happen with this team. And maybe they would have said so anyway, but they probably would have felt like they were forcing the message, whereas after that win, an exciting win over the division-winning team, and in the dramatic fashion in which it happened, probably gave them more credence to what they're saying. And I would, when we're talking about momentum going into the offseason, I would include, even though there were losses, the last three games of the season, because it was in a row against Atlanta, Carolina, and New Orleans, all that made the playoffs, and those are our division opponents. And I think the Buccaneers proved to themselves that they can compete with and beat any of those teams. They didn't beat Atlanta or Carolina, but I mean, the Carolina came basically down to an inch. The Atlanta game, there was a missed field goal at the end, so you can see why they would be confident. And that those three games in a whole tell me that these players, or make me believe these players, go in the offseason feeling pretty confident.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. And that game, I think, especially for Chris Godwin, and when you talk about momentum, I don't know, like you said, momentum is one thing, and hope for the future, I think, is another. And for it to be a win with young guys like that
right.
You can see a Jameis Winston to Chris Godwin connection as being something that could be
absolutely
happening for a very long time here. And I just think that it was also so big for Chris, who, you could tell he has already so much respect in that locker room for the type of work he's put in this year. And I was going to feel so bad for him if he went the whole year
without
doing so much without a touchdown. So the last offensive play of the year, I was really glad that
9 seconds
that
left.
That's just incredible.
I would concede, even when I'm kind of being skeptical about momentum, that's some momentum for Chris Godwin, because he started the last two games of the season with DeSean Jackson out and produced as well as you'd want a starting. He had over 200 yards. I mean, if you can average 100 yards a game and get a touchdown every other game, and he was clearly a reliable guy that Jameis had no qualms about throwing the ball to. And then he also had that one other start, maybe was it the Jets earlier in the season,
when
Mike was having and he played very well in that game as well. It was very productive. So you put him out there, give him the snaps, he's going to produce, and probably this is good momentum for him specifically going into the offseason.
I would agree with that. So outside of the way it ended in Chris Godwin's performance, what were some of the big things that stood out to you for that game, and maybe even especially why it did go differently than so many of the others that were so close and they came out on the wrong end of it? Could you tell anything about why this one went the right way?
No, and I think that's the point.
Yeah.
The Bucs were 3-7 in games decided by 7 points or less, and 1-4 in games decided by 3 points or less. And I don't think you can say they played dramatically better in this game than they did in Carolina. They won this one. They lost one in Carolina. It came down to a play at the end. This time they made it. The time before they didn't. Maybe you can say something, and I'm sure there'd be plenty of people that would argue this, that a young team, because it is still a young team, Jameis Winston isn't 24 yet, and we were just talking about Chris Godwin, all four of the rookies who played this year played a lot. It's a young team. Maybe a young team does learn how to win, and for anybody who's only listening to this, I just did air quotes for learn how to win. It's another one of those unquantifiable things, but there's enough people that put some credence into it that I believe there's something to it. I mean, you go through it's like when baseball teams make the playoffs for the first time, there's always this thought they don't have playoff experience, and so they're going to have a disadvantage against teams that do, and it usually does prove that way. And so I think there is something to getting that experience and learning how to win.
And I heard some of the guys talk about that final drive that Jameis got in the huddle as they're about to go down there, and he just said, we are going to go down, and we are going to score, and we're going to win. And they said, and we believed him. And I think there's something to that of when you talk about the air quotes of learn how to win, that there is something to the idea of it's not hoping we're going to do it, hoping we're going to win. It's knowing and believing that you have as a team what it takes to do that.
I wonder if they still believed at 4th and 10, though.
Yeah.
I mean, he told them that at 1st and 10 at the 5. And this, maybe they did, and maybe that's why nobody panicked on that play. That's
right.
What Coach Cutter said, that Jameis didn't panic on that play. Mm-hmm. It was pretty clear from the snap to Coach Cutter that the play they ran with Cam Brate was going to work. He could see the zone where Cam was going to sit down in. And Jameis had to step up a little bit, but he delivered the ball very calmly, and Cam caught it and just – he knew he was over the line.
Yeah.
So maybe there's something to that, but I bet they were a little nervous on 4th and 10.
Yes.
And also, whenever you have one of these situations where – You have your story about the guys in the huddle saying they know they're going to go down there and win it, and then they do. It's an awfully uplifting story, but don't you think there was some point along the season where they said that in the huddle and then they didn't?
That's very true. They just don't tend to say that after the game as much. We don't hear that story.
I would call it a learning experience rather than the belief that, you know, every single time in these situations they're going to get it done. But, I mean, if they believe that, that's great.
That's true.
I guess.
That's true.
I don't know.
Anything else from the game in particular stand out to you that you thought was an interesting of note?
Well, you know, Jameis continued his good stretch to end the season. He had the 3 picks, which unfortunately is going to bring the numbers down a little bit, but they're still really good for the last 5 games of the season. And it just seems like that happens to him about once every 5 or 6 games. He has a game where he has too many interceptions or something, but I do think that they are becoming less frequent. And you know, in this one, he had the one that their linebacker, Craig Robertson, intercepted. It was a good decision. It might have been a 50-yard touchdown had he just gotten a little bit over. He just didn't get it over the line. So it was just a bad execution at that moment. And then the one that Dirk said he really can't do is the one where he threw it in the end zone. You know, he's kind of throwing it up. He needs to just get rid of that ball. But he's been doing that a lot. He really has. There were plenty of times where he took off and ran when he needed to. He actually had a career high in rushing yards for a game with 32, and he slid at the end of them. In fact, one of them, he slid and ended up a little short. So he ended up like 3rd and 1. So, even then he didn't try to dive over and get the first down. And there were other occasions where he threw the ball away. So that three interception number looks a little gaudy, but I don't think it takes away from what he did over the last 5 games of the season. And then also, if you want another observation from the game, the Buccaneers were 13 of 18 on third downs, which is insane. That is a crazy number. They were 10 of 11 in the first down. 10 of 11.
That's incredible.
So I looked at over the last 5 games, the Buccaneers offense converted 59% of its third downs. That the number is mind-boggling. 59%?
Wow.
So, and you saw it in the yardage totals. Huge yardage totals over the last 5 weeks. And the Bucs offense had a lot of nice rankings at the end of the season. But this is where we do the butt, not the dance. When they got in the red zone, they didn't score enough.
Right.
So they move the ball up and down, and everybody knows it. They need to take better advantage of their opportunities. But that's the next step. You can see that this offense can move the ball. They need to fix the red zone issues, and it could be really explosive next year.
And I think that fixing the red zone issues, that's something that they've been talking about all year, and it's one of those easier said than done things. And mm-hmm. I think it is probably one of the more challenging things for people within the building, fans, whatever, because it looks like they have – the people, the weapons that would work really well in the red zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's going to be interesting to see what, after an entire offseason of getting to look at it you know, what they'll decide about that. But that is such an interesting, intangible thing of it'll move, why it's moving so well down the field and then just
But it's a good point. If you have the off, that's something I'm sure they'll focus on, and it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. That seems like a problem you could fix over the offseason.
Yeah.
With the personnel that you have.
Yeah, that's very true. All right, we still have 2 more segments coming up. One of those is going to be getting to your Twitter questions. You can continue to send those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We're going to get a little bit into the Hall of Fame and some of the other news that has come out this last week about the team. So there's plenty to keep talking about here. Don't go anywhere. This is Buccaneers Insider Live.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine. Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Go Bucs.
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Stand up.
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Go Bucs.
Because we know we're on the top.
We stand up.
Welcome back to Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We're still going to have another segment after this one, getting to your Twitter questions. You can continue to send those in. Use that hashtag BucsLive. For now, we're going to talk a little Hall of Fame and everything else we've kind of learned about the team and some news that's come out this week. We haven't had a show since we got the news that Dirk Koetter has been extended through next year. Got to hear from him on that topic after the Saints game a little bit and during the exit interviews. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on his extension and what that does for this team and what you heard from him when he was addressing it after the exit interviews.
Well, if you want my personal reaction to it, I'm really happy that that happened. I do think that this staff and this team as it's constituted has a chance and deserves a chance at some continuity to see what can come of that. Mm-hmm. I think that was a very good decision. You know, I was talking to somebody on that was kind enough to interview me for a podcast recently, and they said there was a lot in their group of people that responded to them, fans. There was a big mix between people who thought it was great news and people who didn't. And I think that boils down to what you asked me what Coach said about it after the game. He said he appreciated the courage that the Glazers had to bring him and his staff back. And some people keyed on that word, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it, because it's just in the nature of this business, when things don't go the way you expected them to, and expectations were high for this team and it didn't go as well, people are going to react and they're going to want a big change, because it wasn't good enough. Something has to change. And it's in human nature. And believe me, I'm in no way being condescending to people that would have those feelings. If you've ever been a fan of a team that's not associated with the team, you probably had similar situations like that. But I think in a lot of cases, and I think this is one of them, your best bet is to stay put and continue with the plan that you had, because you still believe in this plan and you still believe who's here in terms of both players and coaches. And I know I do. That's why I was happy about the news.
Right. Yeah. And I think that makes complete sense. We heard Gerald say after the game that, he's like, I've been through my fair share of coaching changes here. And he said, I definitely was not looking forward to the idea of doing it again.
Yeah.
And he talked about just how huge that was. And we talked about before the season, retaining Mike Smith and how big that was for the defense and their communication and knowing the system and all these guys. I just think that in general, all the different things that continuity can do, that those of us on the outside looking in have no concept of how big of a deal that can be,
right,
to not have to learn a whole new thing of terminology and playbook and everything. That alone is massive.
And every new staff that comes in here has their own ideas of what they want to do. And generally, some of what you already have here fits what they want to do and some doesn't. And so you're seeing a little bit more roster turnover, which means you're sort of creating more issues that you have to address. As a hypothetical example, let's say some new defensive coordinator came in here and wanted to run a real 3-4, not these hybrids that everybody runs, but a real 3-4, which would require some different sorts of personnel in a couple spots, then you'd have to find that. That's in addition to the obvious things that the Buccaneers have to do, which include finding some sort of pass rush and finding more depth in the secondary. Those things already have to happen even with what we have here. So I like staying with what we got, and I wouldn't feel that way if I didn't think we were close to being there. And I hate to keep harping on the record in close games, but it's just something that constantly shows a team that probably – the coaches will never say this. You are what you deserve. You are what your record says. But it probably indicates a team that easily could have had a better record than what they did. So I don't think that anybody's calling for blood if the Buccaneers were 8-8, right, after going 9-7. It would be disappointing because we expected to make the next step. But I don't think there would be the same idea of, like, it was this close to maybe going one way or the other because – and you know, this team was really, really close to being 8-8. I'm not saying we're the only team in the world, like, in the league that can say that. You know, there's probably – I don't know how close – the Jets were 5-11, right? Maybe they were closer. San Francisco was 6-10, but they won all their games after they put Garoppolo in. So maybe things could have gone differently if they'd have had him earlier. So there's a lot of what-ifs, but I'm of the opinion that this team – is better than the record it showed and is close to being what everybody thought it was going to be this year.
Okay, yeah, I think that makes complete sense. Now, switching gears a little bit, the news about the Hall of Fame came out. John Lynch made it into the finalists. This is the year we're hoping. This is it.
Yeah.
Ronde Barber, Simeon Rice did not. I think I personally was a little surprised that Ronde did not make it through based on, I mean, we are obviously biased here.
Just a little.
Just a tad, so I will preface it with that. Yes, I'm biased. But even looking at the stats, I saw several people tweeting out some stat lines of him compared to some of the guys that made it into the finalists. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on Ronde and maybe
yes,
you know,
I probably should
be a little political, yeah. I'm sure, here as you talk.
I'm going to have to address these two separately because it's obviously great news that John Lynch is there again. And again, hopefully it is this year. And I was looking at the field. I think personally that Ray Lewis is a lock. I am of the opinion that this is the year they're going to – I think Randy Moss should be a first-ballot Hall of Famer, and Terrell Owens should have been in his first ballot. And I think there's a lot of people saying they won't put them both in, but I think they will. So that's three spots, I think, of the five. But after that, it was really hard for me to pick out of the 15 who I thought would make it. And that's a good sign for anybody like John Lynch, Brian Dawkins, another safety. So maybe this is the year. Last year I thought was his best chance at the time, and I was looking forward to this year and Ray Lewis and Randy Moss and maybe Brian Urlacher and thinking, boy, it's just going to get more crowded. But I'm looking at the field now, and I think there's a real shot. And hopefully that's the case. And hopefully that's why – I'm hoping that's why the voters, and probably not anybody that's in Florida. It was probably other
– right. I'm hoping, not biased people.
I'm hoping what they did was, like, we're going to go with Lynch. We'll get to Ronde later.
Right.
So that maybe they split the votes
a little
bit. The
idea of whose turn it is almost.
Yeah. I was really surprised that Ronde didn't make it to the semifinals. I mean, I think he's easily a Hall of Fame. He should be in the Hall of Fame. So for him not to be in the top 15 to me, it doesn't make any sense to me. But I'm not going to get up on the soapbox here about it because I've done it before.
Oh, but I love Scott's soapbox.
I've done it before. Well, we only have 90 minutes in the segment. Yeah, 90 seconds.
I was going to say, it's like 90 minutes. You
I'd have
quite
plenty
a soapbox
of time.
In there.
But I also think we're going to be talking about this a lot more. If I was a bet man, I say momentum builds for Ronde next year, and he makes the finalists next year. And maybe Ty Law, who's the cornerback that did make it this year, makes it into the Hall of Fame, and that's just one less guy in the way. But I was still surprised. I will say I don't want to sell Simeon Rice short either. I believe that we think he's a Hall of Famer, but I personally was not surprised that it happened because I don't think he has the nationwide support that he's a Hall of Famer. We've been trying to convince people otherwise, and I think his step up to semifinalist was a huge step for him. It's just some of these guys have to take it one step at a time, and hopefully that's what's happened with both Ronde and Simeon. We'll see. But it's great news for John Lynch. You know, I like what he says. He said the same thing last year when I was interviewing him. I heard him say it on NFL Network. He's not going to sit up there and politic for himself. He's not going to make his own case. But what he will make a case strongly about is that there should be more safeties in the Hall of Fame. And maybe both him and Dawkins get in this year.
Okay. Yep. That would be great. And I think we're going to talk a little bit more about it. I think I saw a couple Twitter questions about him. So that'll be good. And we're going to get to all of those Twitter questions in the next segment. You can continue to send those in throughout this break and the next segment. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
I don't know nobody's going to let another man walk in their house and take something from them. So take that to heart. This is personal to me.
Hey, we call this the jungle. Yeah. It's our house today, man. Yeah. Let's be great, man. Let's go. Let's get it in, man.
Be legendary today. Yeah. Don't forget, this is our house. Yeah. This is our house. Yeah.
Now takes the snap, looks to his right, look, crossing route ball. Hot ball, touchdown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hit the backdrop. It's a Lavonte David quarterback sack, his second of the game.
Let's make it count. We're past the 50, okay?
Big Weston looking. James is going to run to the left to the 10. He goes to the inside. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Attack, technique, and takeaways. Got it?
It's picked off. Intercepted the 30. To the 25, to the 20. Quan Alexander will take it to the house. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Welcome back to Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. Time for our final segment, which is getting to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We get to hear from our Jimenez family, who is always so positive and who I love.
Rays of sunshine.
Yep, they are.
What if they
really
ever send us a negative question?
Wouldn't I think
shock
we'll
us?
Need to quit. I think that that's going
they
to be.
They should do it just to shock
no,
us.
No, not that. Now that I've said we need to quit, now they can't
well,
do it.
Yeah.
Jimenez family said, even with the tough year, the team looks to be heading the right direction and enjoyed every week of Insider Live. Thank you, guys.
Oh, how nice.
And they said they look forward to the new year as big Bucks fans, and they wanted a shout out to their kids, the biggest fans, Joshua, Brian, and Brawley, which I think is a really
all right,
cool name.
Joshua, Brian, and Brawley Jimenez.
So
the next generation of Buccaneer
fans. The next generation
fans
of Bucks fans. I love it.
Or
all
the
right.
current generation of
that's
Buccaneer
true.
Fans.
That's true. They're already such big fans. All right. And then Zurich
thanks,
Bay Buccaneer, which I think this is our fan from Sweden we have, which is pretty cool, said the Bucks lack a pass rush.
Really?
Right?
I hadn't noticed.
I know. And I personally believe it's the reason for our record. But are there any teams in the NFL without good pass rushes that went to the playoffs?
Oh, man. I wish I'd had a chance to
look
at numbers.
This sounds like a good mailbag
thing. You're
going
to have to. Oh, yeah. Good call.
You're welcome.
Although I'm not doing those every week anymore. But I think we just have to think of it case by case. New Orleans had a pretty good pass rush and a great pass rusher in Cameron Jordan.
Atlanta's
wasn't awesome. It was decent. You know, Adrian Claiborne had that 1 6 that game, ended up with about 9 or 10, and they had a number of 4 and 5 guys. Vic Beasley didn't do much. Carolina's was great.
Yeah,
both of their ends had over 10.
Vikings.
Well, Vikings have a great pass rush with Everson Griffin.
Rams, you got Aaron Donald alone.
Rams, he's the best. He's the best.
Good grief.
Maybe the best defensive player.
Did I hear he
game.
Ended up with 11 sacks as a D tackle?
Yeah, and he led the league in quarterback pressures as a D tackle.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, so I think what we're discovering is no.
Eagles, yeah, Eagles have a good pass rush. Mm-hmm. I don't remember their numbers, but they have Fletcher Cox. New England, I don't know if New England has a great pass rush, but they're always an anomaly. They win no matter where their
they
weaknesses
don't get
are.
Discussed with any topic.
Buffalo's is decent. Jacksonville's is great.
Yep. Yeah, I think that this is showing
a really bad one, a really bad pass rush.
There might
probably
be some
not.
That aren't the best in the league or top, or they may not be the team's biggest strength. But I think
it's
that
not a chronic problem.
It's it seems like his point is made of.
I think he's right. Yeah.
If you're wanting to make the playoffs,
you got to have that.
You got to have that. Do you agree with his point he made that you think that the pass rush is the biggest reason for the team's record?
Well. There's layers of reasons. The,
right.
the biggest reason for the team's record is we scored fewer points than the other team. There's reasons that factor into why we scored fewer points than the other teams, and a lot of those come down to not being able to make the big play or the other team making the big play at the end of the game, like Carolina. But factoring into that, how did you get in that situation? Yes, I think the pass rush or lack thereof was a big problem because there were just too many times when the Bucs defense couldn't get a stop, and you got to have a pass rush. I mean, think about it. Clinton McDonald's sack in this game against New Orleans on 3rd and 7, if we don't get him there, then if they convert that, then we're going to lose that game. So that's when a pass rush can make the difference for you, and it did that time, but it didn't in enough of the games.
That's an interesting point. All right, Philip said, this was a hard season, but you guys always stayed honest and gave us the truth. Thanks, Philip. Well, we try. And he says, thanks for your work. Will Mike Allstott ever make it to the Hall of Fame? His stats aren't great, but his plays were.
Mike Allstott is exactly where he should be, which is in the Buccaneers Ring of Honor, because he is and deserves to be one of the favorite Buccaneers of all time. But I don't think fullbacks are going to get into the league. And Mike was a full into the Hall of Fame. Mike was a fullback who was an awesome tailback,
right,
which is an awesome thing. Ask me if I think he's worthy of a gold jacket, bronze bust. Sure, but there's no way that voters around the league that aren't as in tune to what he did are ever going to choose him. Because like you said, I mean, I think Mike has somewhere over 5,000 rushing yards, which, by the way, is phenomenal. He's got a huge number of touchdowns, like 78, I think, which is awesome. He could catch the ball. He really did it all. Plus, he was the kind of guy that his teammates loved because he was just so hard-nosed. And watching him bounce off tackles always got everybody excited. He had some ridiculous skills. His balance for the size that he was to me, his greatest asset, because he could take hits and stay up. Sometimes he'd take a hit when he was going down, and it would help him get back up. So whether or not he's deserving of being in the Hall of Fame, he'll never be in the Hall of Fame because he doesn't have the same profile elsewhere that he has here, but his profile here is very, very deserving. One of the greatest Bucks of all time.
It's very true. Kevin said, awesome to end the season with a victory. How would you rate the Bucks' kicking situation?
Well, okay, let's break it all down. The punting situation, the numbers aren't real great, and we just re-signed Brian Anger after his great last year, but I don't think Brian Anger performed poorly. The one blocked punt and the one deflected punt, and then a bunch of situational punting, I think, led to his numbers looking worse than you and I watch him. Don't you think he seemed like he had a really good year?
Yes.
He seems kicking as well as ever.
Yeah, he got asked to do a lot of stuff. And actually, Coach got asked that, I think, on my last radio show with him. And he said that they asked Brian to do a lot of directional punting, which he basically said, really, the way to boil that down is asking your hang time to match your distance.
Yeah, okay.
And that he basically just said that the way that they were, what they were asking him to do, his numbers weren't going to be great. And you forget there were those two blocked punts, which the way they got blocked, of like how much they affected stats compared to normal blocked punts, of like, because they were counted as 0 yarders, that like they got blocked at the line of scrimmage.
One of them did.
At least one of them did.
One of them went forward, which counted into his gross and net average.
And one was literally at the line of scrimmage, and it counted as 0 yards.
Right, and that one hurt him. The other one hurt his net, but not as gross, because block punts count in a kicker's and a punter's net, but not as gross.
Right. So the way they even got blocked.
We agree on that part of it. So let's finish that part. The kicking game certainly was terrible at the beginning of the year, and then Patrick Murray really settle it down. His numbers, his field goal numbers by the end of the year were very, very good, and most of his misses were from beyond 50 yards. And so he deserves all the accommodations in the world. He's an NFL kicker, but you do worry about the distance and not just on field goals. And I'm only saying that because Coach Cutter said it. He was asked about, and he was praising Patrick Murray and the work that he did, as he should, but we were last in the league in touchbacks, because that's just not his strength. He's obviously an incredibly accurate kicker, but it's not his touchbacks. Kickoffs aren't his strength. And we were last in the league in touchbacks against us. So there's a big gulf there, and that needs to be probably lessened, that gulf. And I don't think you can be last in the league. If you're not allowing kickoffs to be returned, then Alvin Kamara's not going 106 yards on you. And 103 yards in the game before. So I think that needs to be improved some way or another. And the return game was kind of eh.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I agree with that. All right. That's going to do it for us here on Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. I know there were definitely some questions that we didn't get a chance to get to, so make sure you stay tuned next week. I'll try to get to those before our next show as well. And you can always send in the questions throughout the week as well. Use that hashtag BucksLive. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you next time.